Session number 14977, Ernest Harvey, Reel 3.
Mr. Harvey, Reel 3. In the afternoon, Mr. Harvey, what was the routine?
In the afternoon, well, I should imagine we'd probably go out in this field and we'd be getting down. Yes, they used to set these guns up on the rifles on stands, and they used to learn how to fire the rifle. And they used to aim for 300 yards and then 500 yards. And
was there anything about the rifle that you were warned against when you were first firing with it?
Yes, there was more or less, there's a safety catch on the rifle, like, and you always made sure that the safety catch was off. And we never used live ammunition on the rifles, not when we were training. The only time we had live ammunition was when we went to the rifle range.
How long would that take you into the afternoon?
About an hour, I would think. Practicing 300 yards and then 500 yards, and then we were practicing firing on the ground, getting on the bottom, and how to get down, and which way to lie down behind the rifle.
Is there a certain way of lying
there
down?
There is a certain way, yes. You have to put your knees more or less together to take the recoil of the gun. And of course, they learnt how to sight the rifle.
How is that done?
Well, the rifle, there was like a point on the end of the rifle, and then there was a V above the barrel, and you had to get this point at the centre of the V, and then that was it. You get that on your target and then squeeze your trigger. You didn't pull your trigger, you squeezed your trigger.
How proficient would a good rifleman be able to fire? What kind of rate of fire would he have?
Well, I think there was only 10 rounds in a what we call it, I would say, 10 rounds, 10 rounds, and 30 seconds.
Quite rapid.
Quite rapid fire, yes. Would have to be rapid, like.
Did you have any training anti-gas precautions at this stage?
Yes, we did. We went into I had this building where we had to go in for gas treatment. The toss is about 10 of you went into time, and they tossed these two cylinders down, and all the gas, they filled this room with gas, and you went in with your gas masks off, and then the corporal would say, take your gas masks off, and you took them off, and then after a while you got an awful sniff of this gas, and then you had to put your gas masks on, and you got another dose, and that was it, and then you came out. That was your testing for gas.
Did you ever find out what gas it was?
I can't remember now what it was, but I know it had an awful taste.
Were you carrying gas masks at this time?
Oh yes, we always carried gas masks at that particular time, wherever we went.
Bayonet training, at what point did you start that?
Well, I think halfway through the training we would start using the bayonet. Of course, we had these targets were set up with, pillars or anything. They used to set these targets up, and then the sergeant used to take a training with a rifle. He would more or less say to the stomach point and then to the throat point. But there was a special way to hold the rifle when you were using the bayonet. you used to more or less have to keep the butt of the rifle down with your arm when you were using it, and then you used to point to the throat, and there was a special method which you were taught. And you all went through that procedure.
Was there a lot of time spent on this training, being
was,
a training?
There was quite a lot of time spent on being a training.
It was looked upon as an important part.
Yes, of course, those were the old-fashioned bayonets what we had. There were the very long ones or the flat ones, but eventually we issued with these short 6-inch bayonets later on, which were much easier and not quite as heavy.
This would take up, presumably, to around about tea. What time was that?
Tea, I think, would be about 5 o'clock.
And what meal would you get there?
Well, you'd get the usual. You'd take your pine pot and your knife, fork and spoon. You'd sometimes have, I think, a favourite then used to be cheese and potato and 2 or 3 slices of bread. And there used to be different types of cake, apple pie. The food was, it varied. The hall was at a selection advancement.
After that was the time your own?
After that, more or less, the time was our own, unless, of course, you had to go on guard or picket or on CB. Unfortunately, I didn't do any CB advancement. And, of course, if you were on guard duty, well, you had to be fully dressed,
What was the process of taking up guard duty?
Well, if you went on guard duty, those used to have to report to the guard room, and used to have your small pack, your pouches, and your water bottle, your rifle with your bayonet. And you used to have more or less 2 hours on, and I think it was 2 hours off, if my memory serves us right.
Were you inspected before you went on duty?
Oh yes, we had. Sergeant of the guard, and sometimes the officer used to come down and inspect the guard, both going on and coming off.
Had it to be a very high turnout?
It had to be, oh yes, you had to be very smart when you were on guard. And of course, your rifle had to be inspected. Your barrel had to be perfectly clean.
How did they do that?
Well, we used to clean our barrels with a pull. We had a pull through which was at the bottom of the rifle. We used to take it out and then we used to use it and pull it through. And used to do that 6 times, more or less, before we went on guard. That was the first thing the officer used to look for, was examine your barrel of your gun. And if you had a dirty gun, well, you knew what to expect.
24-hour guard. Was that what it was?
No, I would think it was, 12 hours, I would think. Until 8 in the morning, 8 at night, 8 in the morning, 12-hour guard.
Were you excused duties for the next day or part of the next day after coming off?
Sometimes you were excused duties.
Did the inspection entail selecting someone as the cleanest, smartest soldier of your guard?
Oh no, you were selected. Everybody took the turns in doing guard duty because you didn't get much sleep when you were on guard duty because you were all out all night. You know, if it was splashing the rain, you were still out on guard. So everybody more or less took the turns for doing guards.
You didn't have a stick man who was selected out of the guards?
No.
Nothing as they had in other units?
No, nothing like that.
If you had the rest of the evening to yourself, how did you fill that in?
Well, we used to go to the naffy. There used to be a large naffy there. Or sometimes to Willington. Of course, that was about a mile down the road. But if you'd been out all day in a route march, well, you couldn't be bothered. You'd more or less just stay in the barracks.
What could you get in the naffy?
Well, cups of tea, well, more or less anything, cigarettes, cakes, beer.
You said you went down to Willington. How did the local people receive you?
Very well. Of course, I mean, it was quite good for them if we went down there, because we were spending money. If we went down into Willington, they would look forward to going down there. More so the pubs, if you went and got two or three drinks. But as I say, like, after you'd been out all day, sometimes you just couldn't be bothered. But I think the people were very good.
Did you go to the pubs yourself?
Four times I went, yes.
If you stayed in camp, what activities did you do?
Well, there was the naffy. If you wanted to go to the naffy, you'd have a cup of tea and a cake, or you could have a drink of beer or cigarettes if you wanted them. Or if you stayed in your barrack room, you might want to clean all your equipment. Depends what you were doing the next day. If you turned out, you had to be smart. The following day, you'd have your trousers, because each night we used to put our trousers under the bed to keep them fresh. Then you had your blanco on to do, which more or less you did that more or less every night, the first opportunity you got, because you had your gaiters. Those had to be clean every day. And your small pack.
What time was lights out?
Oh, I think it lights out, I think it was 10, if my memory serves us right. It was 10 o'clock, I think.
Were these done by bugle calls?
Bugle calls, yes. Yes, the bugle used to go about 4 or 5 times a day.
You mentioned the Duke of Wellington's, who were on the same site with you. Did you get much opportunity to meet with them?
Not really, no. I just used to watch them now and again when they were on parade. But they were, as I said before, much slower than us when they did sloping arms and present arms.
You mentioned your sergeant and the corporal and lance corporal. Who was your officer?
I can't remember his name.
Did you meet the commanding officer of the camp?
I think it might have been McBain. I'm not certain. If my memory serves us right, it might have been McBain. I'm not absolutely certain of that, mind.
Did they have much to do with you, the officers?
No.
Did you learn to work with and fire and dismantle, put together again other weapons?
Oh, yes, the Bren gun, we used to take the Bren to pieces and put it together again. In fact, we used to have to practice doing it blindfolded. And we became proficient. You had to do it blindfolded. You know, it was mag off and mag on, and then the barrel off, and change your barrel. Everything got to be spot on with your brain.
Any anti-tank weapons? Did you learn to fire?
Well, we didn't have the Piat then. It was later when I think the Piat came into. But we had the small mortars, which we were trained on those. I mean, those only fired, I think it's about 300 yards.
Were they easy to fire?
They were quite easy to fire, the mortars. The only thing is, it was a two-man job. One had to carry them and another one carry the mortars. That was the worst part about that, carrying the mortars. And the Bren gun was quite heavy as well. Of course, we used to shift the Bren gun among the platoon when we were on route marches. You know, pass it down the line, take your turns, maybe every couple of hours somebody else would take it over. But there was always one man allocated for firing it. And then he had his number two. But each man carried Bren gun mags.
Firing all these weaponry, were there any accidents?
I can't remember any. No, I can't remember any. Fortunately.
Did you come across the use of carriers?
Bren gun carriers, oh yes. Of course, we sometimes used to work with those. More or less, I think once we went on a scheme when I was at Bensmith, and we went out with the Bren gun carriers.
Did you do any field work, attacking, defending?
No, not at Bensmith, not with those.
Were they teaching you any of the history and traditions of the regiment?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they had time, because I think we only did about 6 weeks training there. And I don't think that came into it.
And there were no educational...
No, they were more or less, concerned and training us for fighting, mainly. No, because really the war was on then.
When you passed out, was there a passing out parade?
No, I don't think there was. I can't remember a passing out parade. We more or less, we were just finished our training, and our 6 weeks training, and then everybody was posted.
What date was this when you finished?
I did 6 weeks training. Let's write it down somewhere. I wrote it down somewhere.
You started in the June. You went in the June, did you?
June. And I did 6 weeks. June, July, right. August. It'd be September, I would think, when I was posted to 70th Physical Development Centre at Skegness, which is now a Derby Miners' home. See, I was graded to be one and transferred there to go on a physical development course.
Was to build you up?
That's right.
At what point did they grade you at that?
Well, after we'd done our 6 weeks training, I had to go and have another... Everybody had a medical. And there was a number of us was posted to the 70th Physical Development Centre at Skegness.
What were you doing there?
Well, at Skegness, we would do nothing else but PT, unarmed combat, and route marches. More or less fitness. And all we were dressed in was shorts and sand shoes, more or less every day. And we were doing remedial PT, unarmed combat. And then after a few weeks, it was all route marches, and odd times we would do drilling. But it was mainly physical development each day. You know, nothing else but PT. I mean, stomach exercises and knee exercises and chest exercises. And we had two physical development PT instructors. Actually, I think they came from County Durham, and they were two twins, if my memory serves me right.
And this centre would be basically for men of any regiment?
Yes, they were there from all different regiments, but they were all young chaps like myself, around about the age of 19 to 20, and they were just there for physical development, nothing else but PT. And that's more or less all we did. And the food there was really tip-top.
Was there a medical staff to keep checking on you?
Well, the MO there was a chap who was called Major Lovelock. He used to be one of the world's famous runners, if one time, in those days. And he was the MO. And he used to more or less examine us nearly every other week. You know, just a quick check. But they were quite good.
So this would be to build muscle power and stamina?
That's right, yes. Muscle power.
To whatever they wanted
you
to get
right,
to?
That's right, yes. Nothing else but PT.
And how long did that take?
What did all go down there? What? A couple of months, I would think, I was there. 2 months, I would say. It's Skegness, on this physical development centre. And then after that, we passed out doing route marches. And we had, I think it was a 25-mile route march we did when we passed out. And after that, I was transferred to the 70th Battalion, Durham Light Infantry. That was the boys, which was based at Barnet Castle.
So you came down to Barnet Castle to this... young boys unit.
Yes.
But what age would be the men in that unit?
Well, everybody was under the age of 21, excepting the NCOs and officers. And At that time, I think I was, I'll be 19 then when I joined them. And I was put into the signal section. And Sergeant Lucas, he was our sergeant, and then there was a Corporal Calvert. And then we had a nasty little bloke, Lance Corporal Robson. And the officer was a chap called Livesey, which we saw very little of. He went away. I don't know what happened, but he came back eventually. But now training there consisted of Morse code. We learned in Morse code, flag bashing, using 18-inch radios. But unfortunately, we were all, me and this chap called Bill Mather, always got the dirty jobs, and we were always seemed to be carrying these 18 sets when we went on these schemes, because we used to go on the Yorkshire Moors every day.
Had you asked to go in the signals, or you just put in?
I was just put in. Oh, no, you don't get asked. I was just placed in there.
The camp itself, whereabouts was it in relation to the town?
Well, it was about a mile outside of the town, and next to it was another big camp, which we called the Battle School. And the camp was situated, and at the top of the, it was like in a, down in the valley of the camp, and at the top of this bank was the guardroom right at the top. That's where the entrance was.
What was the accommodation like?
The accommodation was quite good. It was similar to Vanspurs. It was a big building with a fire in the centre and the usual double bunks. Unfortunately, I got a top bunk this time, which was hard work.
The process of keeping the building clean was basically the same?
It was more or less basically the same procedure. Of course, the only snag there was, as I pointed out before, if you got CB there, you got pack drill. And we were often on CB. So.
What is pack drill?
Well, pack drill consisted of, you had to report to the guardroom at approximately 5:30 each night. You had all your kit on. You had your big pack, your small pack, your overcoat on. You had your pouches filled with brain gun magazines again, you had a grenade, you had a bandolier, and you had your rifle, and you had your bayonet, and then you had your water bottle filled, and you had to have your towel and soap with you in your small pack. And then the corporal of the guard would come out and he'd inspect you, and then they would double you up and down for a half an hour. Then after, when that half hour was finished, you reported to the cookhouse. And then you did all the dirty work. You either peeled all the potatoes, or you washed all the pans and all the dishes. All the dirty work. And after that, you went back to your barracks, and then you had to get changed. Then you had to report to the guardroom again. I think it was about 10, and then that was it. You were back to you get some sleep if you could, unless you were on picket duty. But if you were on picket duty, you were on guarding the trucks all night.
What were you guarding with on picket duty? Was this rifles?
Well, you just with your rifles. You just went round with your rifles. Of course, you wore your tin helmets when you were on duty there. And I mean, there we had one company who used to take turns. One company would dress up in jury uniforms. We had all proper jury uniforms, the helmets, the lots, I had everything. And another company would be British. And then they would go out and they would meet and have a practice fight, you know, whatever, on these schemes.
You mentioned that this, in effect, was a kind of not only a training battalion, but a one that was used as examples for training other units and men.
Well, no, this was just in the boys' battalion. This was what was happening among the different companies. You know, one company would be all dressed up, as I said, with the full as complete with jury uniforms and everything, and they would go out on schemes every day.
So you're doing field work here?
Oh, yes, yes.
How was a unit, light infantry unit, how would it attack a defensive position?
Well, as I said before, like I was in the signal section, and we were going out on the moors, and we were carrying these 18 insets, and I mean, we were using live ammunition then on the moors, and we were using live artillery, you know, and the artillery would sort of pound the positions, and then they would move up, and we would just move up with them, and that used to go on nearly every day. I mean, we did have casualties on the moors. In fact, I was on a parade at Barnet Castle, where I think there was an officer and someone else buried there, and also at Darlington. There was another one, you know, another casualty there.
How were these caused?
Well, I think through shells, firing short. I think that's what was happening. That's what had happened. They were falling short, and of course the officers copped it. Or whoever. I can't remember exactly who they were.
Was it a tough training training program?
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, I mean, you can imagine if you're going out on the Yorkshire moors each day, and if we weren't carrying one of these 18 sets, we'd probably carrying laying cables, and then you were mending cables, and you were coming back, and then you were going, you're having to go and do pug drill for half an hour. Oh, it was no joke.
The 18 set, what did it look like?
The 18 set, it would be, about 20 inches high, and I think about 12 inches wide, and it would weigh about 18 pounds, I would think, approximately. And of course, we used to tune into different frequencies before we went out. So maybe half a dozen of us with 18 sets, and each one would have a tune into the same frequency before we went out. And then you knew which frequency you had to tune into to contact them. And like, you used to do the ABCs, Abel Baker, Charlie Dog, Easy Fox. You know, you used to have to know that right the way through, so you'd know exactly who you were talking to. You know, one call would might be Abel Baker, Charlie, and another might be Easy Dog. And you had the list, you knew who you were talking to. But all this was in code, and this is what we were doing.
And you were learning this code?
Well, we learned it, but as I said before, me and this chap called Beale always seemed to be humping there. I think because we'd come back from the physical development centre, we must have been the fittest among the lot of them. I think that was why.
Did the 18 set give any problems?
Yes, because it could only get a certain distance, and it couldn't. Sometimes, if the weather was bad, you couldn't get through. In fact, those times they gave them up was a bad job, and I think myself that might have been the cause of many incidents what happened on the firing.
Is this about the best that radio communication had in those days?
Yes, yes. Of course, they had the cables as well with the phones. But you see,
how did they work?
Well, they worked all right, but when they were training, you see, what used to happen was the Lance Corporal used to go and they used to cut the wires, you see, and then we used to go and have to repair the wires, find out where they were, and what they used to do, they used to cut the wires and where it was the muddiest. And then we used to go have to find them, you see. And we used to know what was going on, but we couldn't do anything about it. But this was all part of the training, you know, how to repair the wires.
When you came upon a severed wire, how did you repair it?
Well, we used to bear the wires and cut them together, and we used to tape them up, you know. But we came pretty proficient at that. It was no problem. It was sometimes finding them, but when we did find them, it was always in an awkward spot.
And how did you do this at night in all weathers?
More or less in all weathers. Because sometimes you would be on the moors all night as well, you know. Then you would find the wires had been cut, And then it was our job to go and find them.
Were there other methods of signalling other than those two?
Well, they had the flags, you know. And I mean, when you come to be training with flags, that was something we were never much good at, because what used to happen, this little Lance Corporal used to take us out flag bashing, but he used to make us throw our flags in the river before we started, see? And they were heavy, and before you finished, you were shattered. And that was the procedure. So, so life wasn't easy.
In the signal section, how many men did you have?
About 28, I would think, approximately.
And were you all trained to do each other's job?
Yes, everybody had to learn more or less everything, you know.
Who was the commander? What rank did he hold?
Well, he was a sergeant, Sergeant Lucas. He was the main one, and then there was a Corporal Calvert, and then this Lance Corporal. That was more or less it.
Was there a signals officer?
Well, he was, but we saw very little of him. Actually, I think he got to the war office for some reason, and then he never came back. So what happened to him, I don't know. I did hear like he had been badly wounded in Italy later on.
And your job basically was to move up behind any attacking
That's
formation?
That's right, yes. Just move up with
were you attached to
move up with the forces.
Were you attached to headquarters of companies? Or?
HQ company, yes. Yes, headquarters.
And you did this all of the time that you were at Barnet Castle?
More or less all the time I was at Barnet.